It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. One heck of a show. We had a great chat earlier with our guy Dan Pizzuta of the 33rd Team, who joins us every single Thursday. And then at 5:15 today, we had Patrick Peterson, of course, the longtime NFL corner, who is now one of our Odyssey Sports Insiders. And he was great talking about the Commanders defense and then a little bit about his guy, Jaden Daniels, of course, the fellow LSU Tiger. But our eyes are on the defense to get our pick six started tonight. You hear from Cliff Kingsbury in about 15 minutes. But right now, let's get things started with Joe Witt.
The six biggest Commander storylines.
It is caught!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the Pick Six at six.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level and build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
You got two sides of the ball that are kind of trending in opposite directions. For the defense, obviously, it is not good statistically. Although, the trend, maybe that's not even fair. The trend is slightly better than it has been for the defense. The problem is they've started in such a hole that that is a very, very relative statement. Let's get to Joe Witt's thoughts on it for number one.
Number one.
As Joe Witt was asked, is this defense playing the way you wanted? I'm guessing you could guess his answer.
Not the identity that we want to be. You know, we haven't played the brand of football that I was hoping for up until this point. And like I said, that's on me. We want to be a team that produces the ball. We haven't. Now the hitting, I think we're hitting the way that we want to. But, you know, we talk about energy. There goes the phone again. Creating ball, and we're not necessarily doing that all the way. So this is not the style that I envision right now, but we're trending that way. Grown man can't make him do anything.
I guess that was someone's phone going off in the middle of the press conference, which is always a good time. Look, Dan Quinn said it yesterday, Joey Witt today. This is not what they want. They're not going to sit here and lie to us. The numbers are horrendous. Their DVOA is dead last. Their yards per this, their points per that. Like, none of it's good. They're fourth worst in the league in yards, fourth worst in the league in scoring. It's not good. They're giving up explosive plays. They're not generating turnovers. Like, literally none of it is what they want. They're just trying to get guys to do what they want more often. And there is a little bit more of that week after week. And there is a long way to go. Up front, there's ways to go in the back end. Their linebackers have probably been the most consistent group, but like Bobby Wagner's got some stuff he's got to clean up. Frankie Luvu's got some stuff he needs to clean up. But these are smart guys. They're pushing a lot of good buttons. And I think ultimately they will get them going in the right direction. Number two, please.
Number two.
Of course, the safety group has gotten a whole lot of attention. Maybe a little bit less this week because Jeremy Chinn played his best game as a Commander so far. Quan Martin continues to be highlighted as a guy who is playing the way they want. Fast, physical, delivering blows, doing, you know, a lot of good stuff. Even if I think there's a couple of things he clearly needs to clean up. But Joe Witt was asked about the safety group and could perhaps Derek Forrest work his way back into that group as someone who hasn't seen the field yet.
Right now, like I said earlier, that we haven't found the group that's going to go out there each week. You know, I'm still waiting on a couple guys just to say, hey, I'm the guy that's going to just do this each weekend. And I don't care who it is. It could be somebody that hasn't played yet. It could be Chig. I don't care. I just want somebody to say, hey, I'm the guy. Let's go out here and play consistent winning brand of football right now. And so that's what I'm looking for.
And I think that's interesting. And it's a good reminder that just because these guys aren't playing doesn't mean they're not practicing. So a guy like Defoe, and he said Chig is in Chiganuzium there, the corner. Could he be a guy that steps up if he shines in practice? Yeah, we could get a surprise because we don't see practice. So I guess the follow-up then is, hey, how's Derek Forrest practicing?
You know, Forrest has done everything that we've asked him to do. He missed some time early, and I'm not down. I'm actually really high on Forrest. And he's somebody that when we can get more safety packages, that first off, we have to get up and then get him on the field. But he's done everything. He's a great teammate. He's a great human being. And now we just, you know, got to find a way to get him on the field in certain spaces.
I'm sure they would love to, but they're limited by the active roster, and there's only so many safeties they're going to have, and whatever they would want to use Defoe for is not over what they use Jeremy Chinn for. It's not over what they use Quan Martin for. It's not over what they use Percy Butler for, and Tyler Owens is the best special teams player of the bunch outside of perhaps the former All-Pro special teamer, Jeremy Reeves. And so unless one of those dudes goes down, I see it difficult to find the path for Defoe to get on the field. And that's I do think like sometimes coaches will say, hey, he's doing everything we've asked, as a nice way to say, like, he's doing everything we've asked, but he's not better than the other guys. They don't want to say that part out loud because they don't want to put down their guy. I'm a commentator, not a coach, so I will say, like, the stuff that Jeremy Chinn does in terms of, like, fitting runs and some of the really dirty work that maybe goes less appreciated, like, Jeremy Chinn's really, really good at that stuff. And you saw it last week as they got him in the box more and were able to do some stuff. And that's going to be super important this week against this Arizona Cardinals team. Like, this is a week where a guy like Defoe maybe could be really helpful, but, like, not over Chinn. And so I'm curious to see if that evolves. Obviously, it's rare that everyone in the position group stays healthy, so there's always a chance, and it's good to hear that Defoe is doing the things they want. And maybe he could, you know, make some plays if he got a chance. I'm not going to rule it out as impossible that if he makes a play in week 10, like, oh, we told you. I never said Defoe wasn't a good football player. It's just that I don't think he's better, and he hasn't shown to be better, obviously, to them than these other guys, and so he's still on the inactive list. As for the active inactives at corner, that's going to be an interesting watch this week.
Number three.
We got the corners rotating a bit, which I also think is interesting. And I told you guys on Monday, I really liked the decision they made last week at corner to put Sane Ristil on the outside, play a lot of zone. Obviously, they put him in one really bad spot against Chase, but like, okay, that was one. He got beat by Jamar Chase. He's not the first, and he won't be the last. But ultimately, like, Mikey did a pretty good job, had a couple of nice, really big plays, but it also took him out of the slot when they had Noah Igbinoghene as their next guy up, and Noah's a better slot than he is outside. And so you got a little more physical in the slot, you got a little bit bigger body in there, and also if you're going to have to play Noah, you played him at the better position while not taking a huge downgrade. Like, the downgrade of Mikey to Noah outside is bigger than the downgrade of Mikey to Noah inside, so you make the smaller downgrade, and I like that. So the question is now, as Emmanuel Forbes comes back into the mix, what does this rotation look like?
Yeah, once we get everybody healthy back, you know, with Forbes coming back healthy, and then we can see exactly, you know, where we're going to put Mikey, where we're going to put Forbes, and what we're going to do with Juice. And then you have Noah in there as well. So it's fluid. You know, nobody's really said, hey, this is where I'm going to be. And we're waiting for a couple guys to do that. And once that happens, you know, we'll solidify exactly what we're going to do there.
Which is both a coach's way of wiggling out of a question, but also probably the truth that, like, hey, if someone wants to step up and have a great game, then we'll happily put them a little bit closer to pen than pencil. But for right now, everything's on the table. And if Chigozie Anuzium, as he referred to earlier, winds up being the best practice player for this team over a, you know, 3 weeks of practice, Chigozie Anuzium is probably going to find his way onto the field. So there is no one, whether it's contractually, Forbes is the closest one to contractually obligated to be on the field. That's too strong, but he's the guy with the most contractual security, and everybody else, like, there's no real long term ties. So outside of Sanders still, obviously, and he's in a bit of a different category as he was drafted by this group. Speaking of Sanders still, what's the ideal for him? Inside, outside, rotating Joe Witt Jr. on his rookie.
Mike, you know, in training camp we had Mike inside a lot, and especially in the New York game, he was really sticky in the coverage and did a nice job. He has a lot of, you know, really good call command. We moved him outside because of the need, and you know, he got beat over the top on that one play, and it was more of an understanding than just necessarily getting beat on it. But he's a young player that is coming and still developing, and once we get everybody together, he might move back inside. That might be his home, but for right now, you know, we need him where we have him.
So it sounds like he might stay outside. And I also, again, wonder, like, how much of that is getting Igbinoghene on the field if they think he's one of their better corners inside, and that's the path to do it. But it does beg the question, like, okay, well, Forbes is coming back, and he's one of your top guys, theoretically, and Juice is played pretty well outside of two or three plays. And Sanders, there's only two outsides. So I'm curious if either Forbes is possibly not coming back. If, you know, that's just a, hey, we're going to put him wherever and stop asking me these questions because I don't want to give away my answers. If it has something to do with Igbinoghene and what they liked from him inside as a sticky physical player. But I guess we'll find out on Sunday. But there's also packages where he could be in multiple places. So going to be an interesting thing to track, I think, all season long, but especially as Forbes gets back in the lineup either this week or next. Okay, when we get back, the back half of our pick six, top Commanders headlines of the day, offensive edition. Cliff Kingsbury also spoke today. You'll hear from the Commanders OC next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well, always at the Team 980. Coming up in about 12 minutes, David Ubbin from The Athletic on this absolutely bananas story out of UNLV where their starting quarterback is leaving the program because he did not get the NIL money he said he was promised. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about kind of the larger landscape of college football with Ubbin, who's been covering. I remember when I was working in Dallas, he was covering the Big 12. He's been on the national scene forever. Great dude. So David Ubbin will join us coming up at 6:30. But we continue now with our pick six and let you hear from Cliff Kingsbury. Number four, please, Anthony.
Number four.
So the touchdown pass heard around the world the other night. Jaden, 3rd and 7, deep. Terry, touchdown. Jaden, smashed in the face. Ouchie. But all good. Just an iconic play. The first play that I think we 1,000% cement will be on the Jaden Daniels career highlight reel. So with that said, what about the guy that called it? What was his thought process going into it? What did he think of the play? Here's Cliff.
Yeah, really think players, not plays. Like, that's all that was. We basically invented a play because Terry said, I got him. And then you could see the confusion. I screwed up the play call because I was trying to kind of flip things and make it, and they just made it work. And so it's like, in that situation, I learned a long time ago, you think players, not plays. And those two guys made a hell of a play.
I cannot tell you. Like, I want to give Cliff Kingsbury a hug after hearing that. Don't worry, Cliff. I don't know. Cliff doesn't strike me as a hugger.
Doesn't strike me as a hugger either.
Like, a big celebration, like, in the moment, bear hug guy, yes. Doesn't strike me as a hugger.
Nah.
So, there's that. Don't worry. I'm not going to hug Cliff Kingsbury against his will. I'm not going to hug Cliff Kingsbury, period. But I want to, based off the idea of players, not plays. It's also a great explanation of why dudes were confused. Is like, Cliff's calling a play, but he's trying to tag it and make sure Terry, and eventually Jaden was just like, Luke, stop moving. We got the matchup we want. Just please don't line up illegally. Okay, set hut. Bang. Touchdown, Terry. But I can't tell you how many coordinators don't think like that. They're just like, we gotta, oh, they're gonna run this coverage, so we gotta get this, we gotta do that. And Cliff's thought process is like, not we they're gonna run this coverage. What's my best cover X beater? It's, they're probably going to blitz. It's 3rd and 7. How do I get Terry isolated one-on-one? Let's just go 3-by-1. Let's get it. He said he wanted the play here because that's the other thing, too. Terry specifically asked, I want to be in the boundary. He didn't want to be in the open side of the field because often safeties will shift over there, and there's some other things that make that harder. He wanted that condensed space one-on-one. Let's make sure that I have the where I want to be. So he gets to the boundary. He gets on that right side. They have to get everybody else in the right spot on the left, just basically to stand there and watch. And ball comes out, and Jaden hits it. So it's a throw that he knows his quarterback can make. It's the guy he wants the ball to go into, and they were able to dictate it. And that's big-time stuff from Cliff. I love that they did that. Obviously, he needs to, and he would say this, and kind of did, like, he's like, I screwed up. I think that's an admission. Like, he needs to be better about making sure that everyone's on the same page if they need to draw up a play in the dirt. But they'll work on that, and they ultimately got it done. So, hoorah, hoorah. All right, number five.
Number five.
Here in our pick six at six. Six biggest headlines of the day, every day at 6 o'clock for the Commanders. Jaden Daniels has thrown some touchdown passes, including that one to Terry, but he has yet to throw one to the other team. Not just a touchdown pass, a pick six. He hasn't thrown a pass to the other team at all. How has he done it so far as a young quarterback? It's almost unprecedented in NFL history to have this few interceptions. There's a couple of like combo stats that Jaden has where he's the first guy to do it, and no interceptions is like one of the statistics. So how is Jaden Daniels avoiding the turnover bug that bites nearly every rookie in this league?
Oh, don't do that to him. Don't do that to him. I'm kidding. He just sees the field. He is a quick processor, a good decision maker, obviously, and he knows when the party's over. He knows when to throw it away or when to scramble and not force it in harm's way. And we're not built right now to overcome a lot of turnovers, and he knows that. And so we're trying to stay on schedule, be efficient, stay ahead of the chains, and he's really done a nice job so far of doing that.
I do kind of wonder, now that Cliff says that, like, I do wonder if Dan's like, hey, Cliff, can you not say that part out loud?
The fact that was definitely a stray, Chris.
He's like, we're not really built to overcome a lot of turnovers, and he knows that. Like, that's good that they're talking like that in the building. Like, hey, our defense, because they're not going to be like, hey, guys, look, our defense is terrible. They have I heard on the Hoffman show the other day, they have the fifth worst DVOA in league history through three games, and they've been keeping that stat since 1979. I don't think that's happening in the team meetings, but they are probably like, hey, I mean, sometimes it's in games, right? Like, hey, guys, our defense needs us right now. Like, let's stay ahead. So they can be like more motivational, but there's also probably reality. Like, hey, our defense is figuring some stuff out right now. We need to support them. We cannot turn the football over. So if you're not sure, just run. And especially like as good as he is at running. And I bet you that is the instruction this weekend because Arizona plays some complex stuff defensively. And they're going to tell them like, dude, if you're not sure, it's fine. Don't force it. Don't guess. Just run. And he can keep the chains moving that way and stay on schedule and score points. So I just do think that is genuinely hilarious that Cliff said that out loud.
It's okay for, you know, some teams to be like, all right, we're going to ride our defense. But it's not okay to say we're going to ride our offense, considering what we have on the other side of the
right.
ball. That's crazy.
It's not like, hey, look, it's not like Cliff was like, yeah, they suck and they're going to continue to suck all year. So, you know. Joe, you better buy me a nice Christmas gift. No, like they're gonna work as a unit and as best they can to make sure that they do as best as they can on Sunday and moving on forward. That defense is working really, really hard to get it figured out. They're not staffed to be awesome. And so there's just a reality of that. And that's good coaching ultimately is what it is. I think it's hilarious that he said it out loud, but like, what's the harm? I don't want to be like, I almost regret pointing it out because now like they'll be like, oh, I don't want to say that again. And it's like, no, it's okay to be honest. Like we all see it. We know what the stats are. He didn't tell us anything new. It was actually refreshing to hear someone acknowledge reality for once. No coach, ban coach speak forever. That's what I say. All right. Last but not least.
Number six.
Cliff did identify, speaking of being honest, a couple of areas in week two that he wanted to see improvement on going into week three. Did he think that those specific areas were improved upon in Monday night's win over Cincinnati?
Yeah, the biggest deal was the negative plays. We had 18 in week two, and we had four the other night. And it allowed us to not be in many third and longs and stay on schedule and play downhill and mix in some of the tempo. And I think that was the kind of secret sauce to being able to score in the red zone as well. No negative plays in the red zone, which the previous week was our Achilles heel. So I thought the negative plays was the biggest improvement.
Yeah, I mean, that's so big. And we talked about this morning on Take Command. You can check that out wherever you get your podcast, our preview show. Jaden's ability to keep them on schedule and to avoid the negative plays and even turn what would be negative plays into explosive chunk plays, like, man, that is enormously impactful because it just makes Cliff's job so much easier. There are no good plays on the play sheet for any coordinator for 3rd and 13. 3rd and 3, the entire playbook's open. And they've been in a lot more 3rd and 3s than they have 3rd and 13s this year. Real quick, bonus pick six, just because I saw this in the transcript, Anthony. We don't need to pull the audio. Did you see that Cliff did answer one of the burning questions we had for Cliff Kingsbury upon his return to Arizona?
He did?
Yeah. He still has that house. The one from the 2020 draft that everyone saw.
Wow.
The one that was on Hard Knocks, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Cliff said he still had the house. On what comes to mind when he thinks about his time with the Cardinals and if he feels bitter about how it ended? Not at all. I mean, that's why I still got my house here. I love it out here, so I will always be grateful to Michael Bidwell for giving me that opportunity. I think this is actually a really funny quote. First fired college coach to ever get that opportunity. Cliff, a little self-deprecation. And then the guys in that building, some of my closest friends and the team. And you watch those guys play, James Conner, Buda Baker, they still inspire me, so nothing but positive memories. And then someone followed up. If I had to bet money, I would say it was J.P. Finley. On if his house is the famous one from the draft, he said, it's the house. Yeah, it's the house. That's the one. It hadn't changed.
Wow.
So, Cliff, I was wondering. Look at Cliffy coming through. He's still got the house. All right, when we get back, speaking of college, what the hell is going on at UNLV? You've probably gotten 1,000 alerts about this story. The quarterback's leaving. The running back's leaving. The university says this. The quarterback says that about all this NIL stuff. So let's get someone who's actually covering it. David Ubbin is going to join us next from The Athletic to break down the latest NIL NCAA fiasco here on The Hoffman Show. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And I'm excited to talk about this story. We probably could do 3 hours on this story, but we're going to have David Ubbin from The Athletic join us here and talk about this UNLV story that you've probably gotten like 17, I was going to say ESPN alerts, but The Athletic alerts,
yes,
on your phone. Yes, clearly, David. That's where everyone's getting their news from, as they should. And you and your colleagues have written quite a bit about this. I'm going to try to summarize quickly for the audience that hasn't maybe clicked on any of those yet. So their quarterback says he was promised a bunch of NIL money, hasn't gotten it. His dad is saying, you know, one thing, and the school is saying one thing. Their NIL collective has chimed in. There's a disagreement over NIL money. And now that we are in this red shirt deadline period where if you play 4+ games, the season counts towards your eligibility. Players, and he is the highest profile one to do this, are saying, like, if we don't get the money that we were promised, or if we don't like the way things are going, I'm going to redshirt myself, as opposed to the traditional redshirt, which has been imposed on them by coaches. That is the quickest summary I can give. In terms of this specific story, like, as you hear all the different participants chime in, what do we feel like we know? And then what is disputed here that's kind of at the center of this specific version of events?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at the statements from the UNLV side of things, there seemed to be a lot of dispute over whether the offer verbally was enforceable. Nobody seemed to disagree that there was a verbal offer. What does that mean? Can that be enforced? I think it's sort of up for debate. And, you know, in terms of where do we go from here now, I think seems to sort of be up for debate as well. You know, Matthew Sluka seemed like they've been, in his representation, seemed like they've been pushing on UNLV since this deal came in February. I mean, he didn't come to campus until the summer. And then there was another conversation in camp. And then they've played a couple games. And after one of the last games, there was another conversation. They couldn't really not only get paid, but get a written contract that's enforceable. And it seems now that the real reason why, which the family wasn't being told, is that they didn't have the money to pay it.
So there was no written contract when this, initial thing was made. That's not up for dispute. Mm-hmm. There's no, the family's not being like, oh no, we have this writing.
No.
So what does that say? I guess that leads to kind of immediately to the larger conversation and some of the things that I was seeing on Twitter. I'm sure conversations you're having as someone who covers college football, like, what is the current state of the agent game? Because this deal was theoretically negotiated by NIL agents, but I'm assuming the quality of said agents is extraordinarily vast. Is that at the crux of one of the issues? Obviously, we can talk in a second, and I do want to, about like the NCAA's lack of rules and regulations, but the actual agents who are negotiating these deals, is that at the crux of a lot of problems, the fact that there aren't standards and quality for the people doing the negotiating?
It varies pretty widely. You know, the Jaden Rashada deal got a lot of attention. He did have a written contract for $13 million with Florida's collective. That deal was negotiated by a 20-year-old SMU student. So,
wow.
But in this case, you know, it's Antonio Cromartie's cousin. Marcus Cromartie was the agent in question here, and he does work with NFL clients. He does work in the NIL space. But it seems that UNLV at some point during all this discovered that he was not licensed to work in Nevada, which seems like a problem because there's an NFL team in Nevada and there are two FBS teams in Nevada. Seems like an issue. But ultimately, you know, I haven't heard a lot. He works for Equity Sports. It's a very large firm. So I don't think it's necessarily like just some guy running around, you know, having deals. He is seemingly certified by the NFLPA. A lot of those guys double dip and do some NIL work. So the quality can vary widely. So outside of the licensing issue in Nevada, and honestly, I don't know a lot about being licensed to be an agent in certain states. I don't know a lot about the logistics of that. Again, agencies and all that stuff is very new to college football. But ultimately, I don't think that this is a situation of an agent gone wild. And it seems like, you know, there's a lot of deals that are agreed to verbally, and then the contract comes later. And sometimes it does take a little while. Not to this degree, and you could call into question, like, should you move from Massachusetts to Las Vegas without a written contract? Yeah, that seems to be some that's a fair question there. But ultimately, you know, he had trust in the coaching staff. He was given $3,000 for moving expenses, so that's something. But I think you just don't really consider that they're just not going to pay you or not going to have a written contract. You keep, and especially when they're not saying we're not going to do it, or they're, you know, it's just a delay and a delay. It's like, well, we'll get to it this time. We'll get to it this time. You want to have faith in them until at some point, you know, you get to a point where your red shirt's coming up and you got to decide, well, I can't do this anymore.
David Ubbin of The Athletic, one of their national senior college football writers, with us here on The Hoffman Show. So I feel like so much of the stuff around NIL for years, even going back to before the rule change, just came from, for lack of a better word, David, laziness on the NCAA's part. They don't want to regulate this stuff. They don't want to deal with the headache. They're just like, yeah, sure, maybe you could do this, but like, it sounds complicated. And so when the Supreme Court was like, you have to let athletes, like, amateurism, no more. You have to let them profit off their name, image, and likeness, the NCAA was like, fine, go ahead. And that was kind of it. Mm-hmm. How much of the problems that we're having with NIL could realistically be fixed if the NCAA acted as a governing body as opposed to a collection agency from the ESPN rights deals that they make billions of dollars off of?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately you look at there was a time to have a common sense approach to this, and you could have more clear rules, have a lot of debate over those rules, and get to a system that everybody kind of agrees on. Instead, you get dragged out of the Stone Ages by the courts, and then you don't really have any rules. You don't have any enforcement arm to enforce those rules when you talk about like tampering or contracts or things to protect kids. And if you try to put the oft mentioned, you know, guardrails, which I disagree with in general, but if you try to put guardrails on it, you're going to get challenged in court. You're going to lose. The NCAA it has been beaten over and over and over in courts, and you're not going to be able to uphold any of these rules because they are anti-capitalist, and it's just not going to happen. Every time the NCAA tries to explain their business model to a court, the judge or the court kind of looks at them and it's like, you do what? It doesn't go well for them. It never does.
Right.
And so when you when these things are happening involuntarily, then you have a lot less control over what the terms of engagement are. And at this point, it is kind of a free for all. And until you have something resembling employment, resembling contracts, resembling collective bargaining, resembling a players association, which the college sports has none of that right now. And it's kind of working towards some of those things on top of revenue sharing as well from those TV deals. You're going to be stuck in this weird limbo where the sport is evolving, and that's where we're at right now.
Which of those things are getting worked on? Like, what is the hope that it becomes more organized in what area soonest?
Well, the House settlement, you know, is coming, and that seems to definitely be a something where revenue sharing is going to be coming very, very soon, just because all that money, the schools are not going to be able to keep that for that much longer. You know, these are literally billion-dollar deals. The conferences are negotiating and divvying out to schools. And so that's where the real money is. You know, people talk about NIL, but the real money is in these TV deals, and that's the money they've been trying to protect. So that's probably the closest thing. But again, if you get something – I think everybody agrees, players – the perpetual free agency is not good for the sport, but the only way you can change that is have something resembling player contracts. Maybe that's year to year. Maybe that's 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. You could probably, depending on who you are, negotiate some of those terms, but there are no norms there, and there's no ability to do that. And there's no players association to do that. There's a lot of people jockeying to be kind of be that players association. So for right now, I think we get eventually towards something resembling all those things, but the revenue sharing is the only thing that really is more of a sure thing than anything else.
Do you think that football will wind up becoming its own entity in this? Because NIL is not something that is unique to football. Mm-hmm. As we, you know, if people watch, say, the Money Game, which featured, of course, Commanders quarterback Jaden Daniels, then LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels on Amazon Prime, and it highlights all the different NIL deals that all the different athletes across all of their sports are making. But mm-hmm. the revenue model in football is totally different. The amount of money that comes in via football is enormous. So. And also you have the travel logistics and all these other yeah. things that have popped up. Do you think as this regulation and the revenue sharing and all these things come in, that football winds up splitting off into its own entity?
Probably. I mean, I think for conference perspectives, I think we're definitely going to get to something close to that. You know, in the next 25 years, it doesn't make sense that Cal, you know, soccer needs to go play in the ACC or, you know,
I was a Syracuse alum, but I'm not really psyched about Stanford football last week either, but that's,
yeah,
a, that's our
but
problem.
Like, you know, why does, you know, Rutgers, you know, lacrosse or whatever need to go play in the Big Ten against USC? It doesn't make sense. So I think if football breaks off, the conferences can find something that makes a little bit more sense. And then for Title IX stuff, you know, football players become just like a license. I think people don't really want them to be just become the licensed marketing arm of the university, but that simplifies a lot of things. You know, that produces a lot of eligibility questions and some logistics there. But for campus dynamics and campus economics and being compliant with Title IX, if you make them sort of just a franchise that licenses the names and trademarks and stadiums and facilities, I think a lot of people don't like that because they like to buy into the sort of, you know, these kids are just going to campus like everybody else, but they haven't been for a long time. And all of the things that we've talked about from NIL to conference realignment and all that stuff, football is driving it and it is breaking college sports. And I think you have a chance to salvage kind of what's left if you break off football. But that, I mean, just thinking about the logistics of that is giving me a headache right now. So it's a long way before we get close to that. And I think there's a lot of people in college sports that don't want that. So I don't know that we'll ever get to something quite like what I described, but something where football is a standalone in some way feels inevitable at this point.
Yeah. I mean, these are also literally institutions, and mm-hmm. changing institutions is hard. And yes. a lot of the people in college sports are institutionalists. So it is going to be an uphill battle for sure, but probably one that either they will, get ahead of for once in their lives, or they will be dragged by either the Supreme Court and or Congress to do so. We'll see which choice they take. David, I've been writing about all of it and the actual games, which is nice. At The Athletic, you could read his work there and click on those alerts when they come to your phone. They have good information. David, appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, we got like 7 minutes left in this edition of the Hoffman Show, and we have a lot to get to. First, before we forget, Thursday Night Football tonight, Anthony Haney. Who do you have, Cowboys and Giants?
It's a great question, Craig. I think I'm going to go with the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, what a bold take.
I think I'm going with the Dallas
Although
Cowboys.
Although one team lost last week, the other team won. You're taking the team that lost last week.
You are absolutely right about that. But again, like I said on Wednesday, a lot of teams wrote this team. Or, my bad, not wrote. Are writing this team off because of a terrible start to the season. And yes, they have looked bad early on, but I trust in Dak to figure it out. I just need them to run the ball a little bit more because that is what they refuse to do. Put the ball in the hands of Zeke. Let him do his thing. Run the ball.
What is Zeke's thing at this point?
I mean, he's looked okay when he's ran the ball. All I'm saying is you don't want I mean, I guess you did pay Dak all of this money. But at the same token, yeah. You can't just put the game in his hands and let him drop back 60 times.
I think this is so funny.
I don't think you should.
We're going to talk to Will Dawkins on Monday at Wizards Media Day. And
Cook is running for the Bills, Craig. He is running for the Bills.
He is. But the fact that you last week were arguing with Bills fan Wizards GM Will Dawkins about Dak Prescott versus Josh Allen, and your whole thing was like, Dak can do everything. They put it all on Dak. And now you're like, they got to run the football with Zeke. Yeah, I just think it's funny.
You need to have a balance. The Bills have a balance.
I don't disagree philosophically.
That
I think it's funny that you're making the argument.
There. He's getting some help from James Cook. James Cook scored 3 times 1 week. Oh, that was against the Dolphins. Yeah, 3 times, Craig.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is
take some of the low, the pressure.
Some balance.
Yes.
Yeah. Dak got paid all that money because he's capable of handling a lot, but they're putting a little bit too much on his plate.
Thank you.
And the Giants, like, they're not – if this Cowboys defense can't get better against the Giants, the Commanders defense only gave up 18 points to the Giants. Okay, they might have not had a kicker, but there's that.
They got two rookies up front, though. And one of those rookies will be tasked with blocking Dexter. I don't know how that's going to fare. And then the other one, the right tackle, he's given up a ton of pressures all season.
Yeah, their O-line is not – yeah. I mean, look, there's a way the Giants win this game. But Thursday Night Football is always weird, so
– it is weird. So should we go with the Giants?
I mean, you can. I'm going to take the Cowboys.
Should we do the spread thing? Nah. I'm going with the Cowboys, man. They better not let me down. This is the kind of day or team to let me down.
Signed Cowboys fans since 1990, whatever it was. All right. The other thing is best thing from the show today, Anthony. We had so much good stuff. I feel like Pat P. Like when you have a future Hall of Famer on, that's pretty hard to top.
Yeah, Pat P. Was really good. Gave some really good insight onto what could possibly be going wrong with our defense. Even though it seems quite obvious, the way he explained it, I think.
Yeah, he shed more insight. Like, yeah. It's pretty obvious to say a couple of things, but like the guy who's played with the experience and was on the all-decade team, like, yeah, he's got a little bit more to say. That was the first time I've heard him do media stuff outside of a couple of podcast clips. He's really good. And I know he wants to get back on a team, but I'm happy he's on our team as an Odyssey Sports Insider for right now. And whenever his playing time is done, I hope that he stays with us and accessible for a while, although I feel like he'll get into television and someone will pay him a lot of money because he's darn good at it. But he was great at 5:15 today, worth checking out in the podcast as well. Speaking of podcasts, there's a lot happening in the Hoffman sports universe, if you will, on top of the 3 hours a day we're doing on the radio. We got a couple of podcasts as well. The NWSL show, we recorded a new episode today. So what's going on in the National Women's Soccer League? And then Lindsay D'Arcangelo and I will do a fresh episode of the WNBA show previewing the second round of the W playoffs tomorrow. So you can check that out by subscribing to Hoffman W Sports. Search that in your podcast feed or on YouTube. With that, the other housekeeping item, Anthony, is don't be late for the show tomorrow because it'll be over before you blink. Maryland football is on with us tomorrow starting at 5:30. So our show is cut in half. We are going to try to cram our usual Friday into a half a show. So obviously 5:30, we typically go around the NFL. Our show will be over. So I think I put that in at 4:30. I think we're going to do our pick six at 5:00. Which I realize is not how that's supposed to work because it's the pick six at 6:00. We're still going to pick 6:00. We're just going to do it at 5:00. We'll talk about what's at stake and give you some scouting coming off the top. So it'll be a jam-packed show tomorrow. Try to condense 3 hours worth of knowledge, information, and even a little bit of entertainment down into simply 90 minutes. Okay, with that said, Anthony, anything else that we need to cover?
No.
Okay, then it's time for real things.
Real things.
We're not going to be f***ing this year.
Real people.
5-11. Not very good.
Said into real microphones.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
All right, today I mentioned this in What's Trending, the last ever game for the Oakland A's at Oakland Coliseum. It was a bittersweet day. They got the win. It's obviously a terrible situation, a team just being ripped by I have no nice things to say about their owner, out of that city. And it was an emotional day. Here's how the last out sounded. This is from A's television, correct, Anthony? So here's how it sounded on A's TV.
Here's the 1-2, Jankowski to Schumann. And the ground ball will end things. A 3-2 win for the Oakland Athletics. One more win for the Oakland fans.
A W on a day that everybody in the Bay needed one.
Like, I love the call where she's like, a win for the Oakland A's. She really put the emphasis there. And like, honestly, man, like, I'm glad they won. I'm glad the fans get that moment. But, and you just don't go out with a whimper. But also, like, listening to that just makes me sad. Like, imagine a team you grew up, especially like when the owner just like does a bad job, they don't invest in the team, they don't do it, and you continue to emotionally invest for years and years and years and years, and then they still take the team away. Like, you didn't invest, we did. We had our money, our time. You have lots of money. You didn't invest any of it. Sucks. Anyway, Damon Mendelara, our good friend, has done great work on this. Clinton Yates, I know, is out there as well reporting on it. So check out their work. And we'll see you tomorrow back here on the Team 980.